Today's Tuesday, November 20th, and this is episode 72 of the Birdland BS Podcast. Today's show, we're going to get into Lamar making his first NFL start. Gruden and the Raiders is up next. The Terps and Buckeyes have a shootout, and the Orioles get their guy. Stay tuned.
So let's take it to the Birdland. That Baltimore home flavor is coming firsthand. Fred, Scott, and Ryan, tell them the word, man. Mixing a little BS to make it work, man. Sports, they got it. Want excitement, the topic. Make sure when they toss you the ball, you don't drop it. With all that swag, you're gonna listen regardless. Here comes the pitch, so it's time to get it started. It's Birdland BS.
What's going on, BSers? Fred and Scott is in the studio today, back from the warm in Florida.
I did not want to come back. I'm just telling you right now.
I don't blame you one bit. I'm glad you got back safely, though, and the bad weather was after you had gotten back. So
shut up, Fred.
Yeah, it was nice.
Shut up, Fred.
Welcome home there, Scott.
I did not want to come over to that. We were worried about, are we going to have issues getting home? And nope, flight's on. I was hoping for a delay. I'm sitting there like rolling the dice.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Delay.
Get me an extra day, baby. Give me an extra day. Snake eyes.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it felt like. It was gorgeous down there. We didn't have time because we were busy running around everything. I did not have time to go to Ed Smith Stadium. I was a little disappointed to not be able to run over there, but we just had a fun time. It was really family, just spending time with family. It's a good time down there. So
that's good, man.
Yeah.
Glad to have you back. Glad to have you here in studio versus
in helping a mini, out all the technical stuff.
I think the one time you were in a minivan somewhere.
Yeah, I was in the back of our minivan because our signal was horrible. And then the second time I was there, but family was like sitting like 20 feet away from me. I could hear everything I'm saying. I'm trying not to be loud.
Minivan Scott.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, it was fun. I got it done. Oh, man. But yeah, a huge shout out to James, coming in and helping out. One of our constant viewers already in the Facebook room.
Really appreciate it, James. Had a lot of fun. We'll have to do it again with all three of us in the studio for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, absolutely. And then huge shout out, Ryan always, filling in or coming on when he can. So huge shout out to Ryan as well for coming in. So we appreciate it. He loves it in studio now, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. He loves to just be able to sit down and go and not have to worry about getting his crap all set up at his house and everything. So, yeah, big shout out to Ryan. Appreciate you coming in, especially on short notice, and filling in for Scott, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, not a whole lot of time to BS on this episode.
No.
We got a lot of exciting things to cover. A lot of things going on this weekend, man. I had an action jam-packed weekend that flew by.
Yeah,
my legs are still recovering from it. My watch was in overload over the weekend with the amount of walking I did. We'll get into that in a little bit. But I guess let's dive right into this thing, man. Obviously, the big thing that we're going to start with is giving a plug to our sponsor, because I don't want to forget that.
Yeah, no, can't forget that.
So this episode is brought to you by John Scheffenacher of Cummings & Co. Realtors. Are you looking to buy or sell your home? Do you want someone you can trust to go to bat for you? Go see our guy, John Scheffenacher, over at Cummings & Co. Realtors. John's been in the business for 4 years now and is dedicated to getting you the best deal possible. He's always willing to take your call and be available for you anytime, day or night. For you Birdland fans out there, you probably know him as a sunglass guy sitting behind the dugout at Camden Yards. So give John a call, 443-604-6298.
And you guys hear me say it every week. I bought my house from John 3 years ago. He took our call when he's on vacation. He got us into the house that we wanted to see. It was the house that we ended up buying. He's always taking care of his clients. He's strong in negotiating, got us the deal that we wanted with the closing and everything that I wanted set up. Perfect deal for me. I was so happy when we got that deal secured.
Nice.
But he takes care of his clients through his client events as well. And like with the holidays coming up, today
I just saw
him today. He actually hand delivered it to me at work because I didn't want the pie sitting at my front door. He hand delivered that pie to me at my
work. You just tried to keep it from the wife. You wanted to eat it all to yourself.
You know, it's funny, I got home I told the wife, this is not for tonight. We are opening it tomorrow. Don't eat any. The pie is so good.
It's putting amazing out the Christmas presents early.
Absolutely. But he takes care of you. You know, he knows what his clients like, hand delivering the pies and everything. And So make sure that you don't hesitate to give him a call, 443-604-6298. You can hit him up on his email, johnscheffa@gmail.com. That's J-O-N-S-C-H-E-F-F-A @gmail.com. And don't forget to mention to him that Birdland BS was the one that sent you over to him.
Absolutely, absolutely. So let's like I said, dive right into this thing. Obviously, the big and exciting news that everybody's kind of talking about, the Ravens finally, I don't want to say make a change at quarterback because Joe Flacco has the injury, but, you know, somebody's got to step up, and it was Lamar Jackson time over this weekend. So it was a lot of buzz going around that, you know, some mixed feelings, some mixed feelings. You know, I was at the game, and, you know, prior to the game, every time Lamar Jackson would come up on the big screen, you know, you'd get a little bit of a buzz from the crowd, you know, the yules and the ahs, because I think everybody kind of knew that he was going to get the start. And then you had some of the debates kind of going on, at least in my section anyway. You had the Flacco apologists, you know, that are defending Flacco, and it's not time for Lamar. It's not time for Lamar. This whole injury thing is bogus, and they're just, you know, doing this to keep, you know, keep Harbaugh's job and blah, blah, blah.
Heard a few of those.
Right. And then you get the people on the other end, give the kid a chance, you know, give Lamar his shot. You know, he's due, blah, 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 blah. So there was definitely both ends of the spectrum going on in the stands. But man, look, end of the day, the Ravens get an important W, a conference win, a division win, pull themselves back to 5-5 as they beat the Bengals at home. Again, a team that gives us historically issues, knocked us out with the whole big 4th-and-12 last year, the last game of the season, last play of the season, really.
Yeah.
For the Ravens.
Not very much different in this game with a 24-21 win. This was a close game. It wasn't like it was a blowout.
Very eerily similar at the end of the game. I, you know, with the whole hoopla and jinx that I had with the Justin Tucker thing, I kept my mouth shut. I didn't say anything, but I'm sitting there thinking to myself the entire time, like, here we go again. This is looking like it's going to line up to finish the exact same way.
Exactly.
But thank God this one had a little bit of a better result for the Ravens, at least. But I'm going to start with you. So before we get too in-depth with this game, first impressions of Lamar, and what do you think of the whole situation?
Look, I'm happy with what he did. The numbers show he had a good game. He went through and was able to show that he has the ability to compete, in a sense,
right,
in this league. But I do think there's a lot of stuff. You can't run the ball, what was it, I think 27 times or something, like 25 or 27 times.
27.
You can't run the ball. You can't have your quarterback run the ball 27 times and expect that every game. And that's what it was kind of setting up to be. I think a lot of people, for me, you know, it's too early to tell.
Yeah.
Am I happy to get the win? Abso-frickin-lutely.
Right.
Was there some issues and some things that I saw? Abso-frickin-lutely.
Right.
You know.
He's a rookie.
He is for all intents and purposes at this point, in my opinion, as a starter, he's a raw rookie.
Right.
You know, he still has some molding to do. It was nice to see. You know, him out on the field, we've seen some issues with Joe Flacco, and, you know, we'll kind of, I don't know how deep you want me to go into this whole conversation, because I could go on for a minute.
Well, I plan on going on my own little rant here in a minute.
So I'll go ahead on mine then first.
Yeah, good.
So for me, a lot of people are sitting there, Colin Cowherd, I don't know if you saw Colin Coward's segment.
I did not.
On Monday, I think it was Monday, where he went off and basically said, from an entertainment standpoint, he is done with Joe Flacco. He wants to see Lamar for the rest of the season. He doesn't care whether Joe's healthy or not.
He's a more exciting player.
Exactly. He brings more excitement. You know, at this point, he's got a better winning percentage and all this other stuff. But one thing that I think a lot of people are looking at, and you talk about the Flacco apologists. Yeah. There are people out there that are all about, you know, Flacco, it's you know, he can still do it. He's still your better, you know, he's still better than Lamar. He may be a better option. But Lamar has more excitement, has more entertainment value, and in his season, I don't know if you were there, so you can tell me, but from the TV perspective, there were quite a bit of empty seats in that stadium.
Oh, there was. We were talking about it prior to the game. I mean, it's It's been a trend that hasn't gotten any better really since the whole Europe thing last year, where right. you know, the whole kneeling thing and the disrespect of the national anthem and everything. I can't say that that's everything. I mean, it's part of the issue. Obviously, the product on the field is the other. I think a lot of people are just tired of the mediocrity and the
yeah.
you know, not making the playoffs and all that stuff. This team is very much, or this fan base is very much, what have you done for me lately?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you're going to feel about it. I'm sure you're going to go off on your rant here. Yeah. But for me, people need to chill out a little with Lamar.
Mm-hmm.
He's still a proven rookie. I don't know if you're going to bring it up, but there's the guy that was going off about Lamar
yeah.
and stats and everything. And, you know, I'm sure you'll get into that. But it's people need to chill out. He is not the next Drew Brees right now.
Right.
Could he be? Absolutely. He could be the next Drew Brees. He could be the next Cam Newton, you know, who's kind of having some plateau issues right now
mm-hmm.
as
He's
a
got
quarterback.
As good as his peaks and valleys.
Absolutely. But could he be a competitive quarterback in this league? Absolutely.
Yeah.
He's not fully ready to take a team by the reins yet, but I like what I kind of saw. I think part of the play call issue was Marty Morningwig.
Yeah.
Some of it is going to be him learning to make changes at the line when he needs to and not be running the ball when he doesn't need to be. You know, also learning a little bit more to get out of bounds. That was another big thing.
Yeah.
So for me, that's what it comes down to, is he can handle it. He showed that. A, how does he rebound in the second game
mm-hmm.
once there's tape on him for a full game? And B, how does he handle this? If you keep running him, he's not going to have a long, long future in this league at all.
So all right.
I'll let you go off on yours.
I mean,
yours is much longer.
No. I take all of your points, and a lot of your points I 1,000% agree with. First off, I'm going to say congratulations to Lamar on his first NFL win.
Yeah.
His first win in the National Football League. It's a huge first step and a milestone in his career. Now, with that said, as fans, please slow your roll a little bit with any kind of judgments on this kid, good, bad, or ugly as of yet. It was simply one game. Did we learn much about him from this one game? Realistically, no. What we learned is simply everything that we already knew about Lamar and about this team. One, Marty Morningwig's play calling was atrocious.
Absolutely horrendous.
While the running game was working, and I think you should stick to what works to ultimately get the W, and that was what was most important in this game, you cannot ask Lamar to run the ball 27 times in a game. There were only two running backs this week that had more carries than Lamar. If that doesn't tell you enough, then I don't know what does. But with
that said,
I
guess their names, by the way?
Yeah, go for it.
Todd Gurley and Kareem Hunt?
Actually, no. It wasn't Gurley. But with that said, you drafted a kid with the God-given ability to make plays with his feet as well as throw the ball. So I'm by no means saying you need to get rid of that aspect of his game. Not at all. It's a part of what makes Lamar.
Yeah.
It's part of what makes him special, right? Two, Lamar does need to continue to work on his mechanics and his ability to throw from the pocket. I don't mean that he needs to be a pocket passer, but he needs to be able to throw from the pocket when the play calls and situations call for it.
Yeah.
This was his biggest knock coming out of the draft and something he needs to continue to work on. And I think with this game, it was a matter of them trying to get his feet wet. Go out there, do your thing. You know, running and making plays with your feet is probably what's going to make him the most comfortable at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So go ahead, and if that's going to, in your first game, get you over those butterflies, get you over that emotional hump, do what you need to do. And that's why we saw the first 13 plays of this game were nothing but runs. There was not a single pass. But all in all, nobody should be ready to appoint this kid as the savior of the franchise after this start, just as much as they shouldn't be willing to make blanket statements and showing their ignorance to the game and Lamar's abilities by saying he can't play at this level.
Absolutely.
Nothing in this game said anything to me one way or the other. It was simply one game. He played pretty good considering the play calling and it being his first start. I will say that. What a better way to get acclimated to the league by having your first start come against not only the worst defense in the NFL, but probably on pace to be one of the worst historically ever in this league.
Yeah.
Now, if there was anything that you can legitimately pull away from this one start, this one game, I wanted to see if the game was going to be too big for him. And I didn't think it was.
No.
I thought he was pretty cool, calm, and collected. I don't think he lets the emotions get the best of him.
No, but he did show a lot of emotion, which was good.
Which is good. And that was my other thing, was I wanted to see how he react to his first inevitable turnover. Obviously, it was going to happen, and he had it. He had his first rookie mistake with the interception that he threw. And you know what he did? He responded. Next time down the field, he drove him into scoring position, and the Ravens put points back on the board.
Yeah.
You can't ask for much more than that, especially out of a rookie. And then how does he handle playing from behind? And he did a pretty good job of that, considering the Ravens marched down the field, got in the position, and took the lead. Those are the three things that you could really pull, in my opinion, from this one game and judge Lamar based on. Those were the three things that I really wanted to see from him. It's way too soon to make any kind of judgment calls. Now, what the reports that have been out saying that Lamar or that Joe's going to be out for this coming week. So we'll see him one more week again for the Raiders game coming up.
Right.
So we'll be able to make a little bit more of a judgment.
Yep.
Usually you see the most games from week one to week two in a rookie quarterback, or you kind of see where, you know, some of their peaks and valleys are. So just pump the brakes a little bit on him. I know we're all excited to see him take the field, and I think we all kind of want to see what the future entails, but let that play out. Let that take its time.
Yeah. No, I absolutely agree. I felt like that was you had your phone, you were like reading.
I had a bunch of notes,
I felt like you were like, it was like the presidential State of the Union. This is the State of Lamar address by Fred Bonnie.
I did, man. I took all these notes. I'm like, I can't forget. I want to say this. I can't forget. I want to say that. So I wanted to make sure I had it all.
It was perfect. I felt like there's people in the middle that are like cheering and clapping, and then the other people are just like booing or clapping. It's like State of the Union with the Republicans, Democrats. So, yeah, no, I mean, you hit the nail on the head with everything you just said. I think it's huge that he comes into this game and you know, makes an okay impression that he can handle the NFL.
Right.
But can he handle it long term? Can he handle it for more than one game? Because it's a whole different ball game once people get tape on you.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
And it's huge. And there, you know, there's people that are saying, like, you know, and I kind of agree with this a little bit. I don't know how much I feel with this coaching staff, because the coaching staff is still questionable on the year.
Oh yeah,
you know, we've talked about that. And so to have this coaching staff coaching this guy that you're, you know, for all intents and purposes, you're kind of saying is you think maybe your future. You're not saying, I don't think they're saying he is yet, because if he is, there would be no question he'd be starting when Joe Flacco comes, when Joe Flacco's healthy.
You don't waste that. You don't waste a first round pick unless you think he can be.
Right. He has the potential to be.
Right.
So I think there's that piece. But for me, a lot of people are putting the cart before the horse, like you said, and saying, you know, he's the savior of the franchise. And other people are saying, you know, well, Flacco's, look, you got to go with who's going to give you the best shot. And I tell you what, there may be a scenario here where Bob is your best option to win.
Very well. Very well could be.
We don't know.
We don't know. It's too early to make that yes or no on Lamar. One thing I can tell you is we know what we're going to get with Joe.
Yeah.
Well, we've been getting it for 11 years.
What are people going to say if, I'm not saying this is going to happen by any means. I hope it doesn't happen.
Right.
But what if Lamar like craps the bed against the Raiders? One of the worst teams in the NFL right now. If he craps the bed against them and you pull in Bob, and Bob's the guy that lights him up, there's been tape on Bob.
But the world's not going to end if RG or if Lamar shits the bed against the Raiders.
Yeah, like, no, absolutely.
Again, it'll be his second start in the NFL. You can't pull too much away from these games. And like you mentioned earlier, more than likely, and I sure as hell hope so, or I'm going to end this podcast next year.
Don't be saying that.
this coaching staff will not be here to continue on Lamar's development. There's going to be another staff in here that's going to develop Lamar for the future. That's kind of why for, you know, all this time up until now where, you know, we don't have any other options. Lamar's in there now that, you know, that Joe's hurt. I didn't want Lamar coming out there. I didn't want Lamar being exposed with this coaching staff. You know, I wanted him to take a year and sit behind these two guys and just kind of learn the ways of the league and all that. But that's in the past now. We're moving on. Lamar is starting as of right now. So, again, you got to pull what you can from this. But we got a whole game to talk about here. It's not all about Lamar.
Yeah, no,
and that's
not.
I know it's the hot topic and it's what everybody kind of wants to hear about right now. But, you know, this was a game that we went into that, like we said, you know, Cincinnati is on a historic pace as far as their defense goes. I mean, they're awful.
Yeah.
So, again, if you're going to get your first start, what a defense to go against. They gave up back-to-back 500-yard games. That's the first time in NFL history that's ever happened. And we ended up gaining over 400 yards of total offense against them. I mean, albeit the majority of it came on the ground, but we were able to get over 400 yards of offense against this team. You know, we knew A.J. Green and Tyler Eifert were going to be out.
Through the injuries, yeah.
Right. So you had to focus in on the weapons that they had out there, and the weapons that they had were Mixon and Boyd, and we did a pretty darn good of shutting them down.
Yeah, absolutely. The one thing I was surprised, because he kind of killed us the last game, was Mixon.
Yeah.
You know, shutting down Mixon as well as we did in that running game as well as we did. You know, there were still some little bit bigger, I'll call them bigger plays for what they were for all intents and purposes.
They only managed 48 rushing yards.
I was going to say there were a few larger rushes, but for the most part, you were able to keep them in the line of scrimmage, maybe a yard or two,
right,
and then a few of the 7-8 yarders that got through, but that was it. That was it. You know, he got lucky and found a hole on most of them. You know, one thing that I think we did see in this game from watching it on TV, or I should say watching it on my phone. I was sitting there watching it on my phone the whole time. But for me, I saw CJ Mosley. I don't know whether it was by design. He was playing a little bit more up on the line than what we've seen in the past.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe that was because your biggest threats are gone and you can have your cornerbacks and your safeties and your secondary be able to cover a guy like Boyd fairly easily.
Right.
So I was happy to kind of see that, but I question when you get that tight end threat, you know, what's going to happen with CJ Mosley again. Actually, we had somebody on Marlin on YouTube actually chimed in and said, you know, do we think CJ is going to make the team next year? It's to me, do I want him back? Maybe not. Do I think he's going to come back for the right price? Yeah.
The thing. It's got to be for the right price. This guy, in my opinion, is not worth top three money, and I think that that's what the market's going to pay for CJ Mosley is top three money. You're trying to free up as much cap space as you can because you're going next year. You're going to be going under a lot of change and a lot of transition, and part of that is your decision on whether you retain CJ Mosley or not. Again, for the right price tag, absolutely, you snatch him up and you keep him here. He's a young and he's a very good inside linebacker.
Yeah.
We all know what his shortcomings are, so you've got to address that on the back end. You've got to bring in a free safety. We haven't had a free safety here in Baltimore since Ed Reed left.
Yep.
I mean, we've had nothing but box safeties. You've got to have somebody who can cover over the middle if CJ Mosley lacks, and he does. I mean, obviously, he did actually have a decent game in pass coverage in this game. He had one pass reflection, pass deflection, that was really impressive. I mean, he got, you know, dove in and got his hand in to knock the ball away. You know, it stands out, when CJ Mosley makes a pass deflection. Look. As much as I want him a part of the future and I want him a part of this team, it's got to be for the right price.
Yeah, no, it absolutely does. But, he did obviously play enough role. And you talk about safeties, you know, everything along those lines.
Right.
You know, you need a safety that can run a 4.240.
Right.
Period.
Yeah.
Like, that's what you need.
You got to have a rangy safety. You got to have. That's the whole purpose of having a free safety and a strong safety.
Let me ask you, kind of going off topic for here for a quick second on this. Do you think Jimmy Smith could be that guy?
It depends. Jimmy's had a lot of off the field issues. Jimmy's had a lot of injury issues. I don't know. You know, he's already overpaid for what he does as far as a corner goes, just because he can't stay on the field. And this year, honestly, his play hasn't been very good.
No.
One guy that is playing very good, Marlon Humphrey.
Yep.
I mean, he's been clutch, and he was huge in this game. Obviously, he made the game-winning play there to seal the game on fourth down, but he's been a guy that's been huge.
Yeah. James brings up, by the way, that the corners were jamming the safeties.
were jamming the wide receivers.
The corners were jamming the wide receivers.
Yeah.
A good portion of the game. And that's that Marlon Humphrey was one of those big pieces.
Well, that was the adjustment that we wanted to see them make. You know, the Ravens knew that part of their issue was getting off the field on third down. And we saw that, and you see that from my seats, clear as day. They're giving way too much of a cushion on third and shorts. And that's the big problem, is they're running these quick plays, these quick slant routes, and they're getting third down conversions. The Ravens made the adjustments in this game and were able to shut that down. I mean, they held the Bengals to a 255 total yards of offense. That's huge.
Yeah, that is. It absolutely is.
That's huge. But yeah, I mean, as far as the defense goes, like I said, I'm almost to the point where I'm ready to say Marlon Humphrey is the best player on this defense. Honestly, like, if you really think about this defense, who's better?
I mean, yeah, I can't.
There's nobody on this defense that's better, that's playing better football right now than Marlon Humphrey. The pressure.
I can't say he's the best, and here's why. I haven't seen enough of Kenny Young in the role I want to see him in.
Kenny Young's still too young, and still, he, as much promise as he showed in training camp and as much promise as he showed early on in the year, he's kind of dipped off and kind of come back down to earth. I think part of that could be fatigue. You know, this is a guy that, again, he's a rookie. You know, college football, they don't play anywhere near.
It's not that level.
You usually see college football players start hitting that rookie wall about now if they've been playing the entire season, just because they're not used to it. They got to build up to this, you know, to this point as far as stamina goes. I think I like Kenny Young's promise, but Marlon Humphrey, in my opinion, head over heels as far as best player on this defense right now.
I can see what you're saying there. I can see it.
We need to make some adjustments with the pass rush. It's concerning. I mean, Judon, Za'Darius Smith, and Terrell Suggs have just basically disappeared.
Yeah.
There is absolutely no pass rush.
Sizzle started the year great. And then
been the trend with him.
It's a second half. I think it's that he's a guy that's dealing with a lot of fatigue, you know. And for him, I think it's even more so, just for the simple fact that he's getting up there in age as far as, you know, his NFL career. He's probably got, you know, we'll see. It could be this year the end, could be next year the end. He's the type of guy. He's the type of player. I think he'll let you know when he's going to go out the year before.
Right.
He's going to let you know. It'll be public information. But I think that at the same time, he's played at such a high level for so long. I'm not going to say he deserves the right to kind of disappear in the second half, but he kind of does.
Well, in my opinion, if you know that about Suggs, and us as fans, we can see that. I mean, it's been a trend that's been happening over the past few years.
Yeah,
You gotta build your defense around him to make him more of a situational rusher, where he's not out on the field very much, and he's only out there with one mission and one mission only, and that's to get to the quarterback, and you keep him fresh. You only put him out there in like third down situations,
right,
where you're trying to get to the quarterback. That keeps him fresh, and that keeps him involved all year long. But when you rely on him as your top pass rush threat, because other players like Judon and Za'Darius Smith, Tyus Bowser, where the hell is he?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Like, none of these guys are living up to their potential. You know what I mean? Like as great of a year as Za'Darius Smith started, these past few weeks, it's just been, he's been gone. It's just disappeared.
Yeah, he's been, the offensive line has been kind of manhandling him from
they're
from
game standpoint. Planning for him.
Yeah,
for
absolutely. And I've seen a few times where they've double teamed him.
Yeah.
Because for all intents and purposes, with Suggs getting a little bit tired, you don't have to have double teams on Suggs like you used to. In his prime, everybody was double teaming Suggs.
Oh, yeah. You had to chip him.
You had to.
Yeah.
But you're not seeing that as much anymore. So the focus kind of pulls to the other side and up the middle. And you're able to kind of control the game a little bit more. So
let's shift sides. Let's talk a little bit about the offense. We've already kind of dove into Lamar. Obviously, statistically, Lamar had, you know, a decent game, 13-19 for 150 yards. We talked about the one big interception that he had. That was the rookie mistake he had. 27 carries, really it was 24 because three of those were Neal's.
Right.
But he did have 117 yards over a 4.5 average. Pretty impressive. Now, as far as the wide receiver core. There were some issues here.
Yeah.
Obviously, Willie.
In their eyes, too.
Yeah. Willie Snead, Michael Crabtree. Snead kind of got into Morningwig's face in the sideline. And then Snead and Crabtree apparently got into it with Harbaugh in the locker room after the game. Now, all has been kind of smoothed over and resolved. But this is what's going to happen with your wide receivers if you don't involve them and you're not targeting them. We were talking, Ryan and I were actually talking about this while we were at the game, is, you know, as much as Lamar is, you know, the RPO style type of quarterback, he can pass the ball. If you're not going to involve him more in the passing game than what we saw today, which, or what we saw on Sunday, if that's going to be the norm for Lamar, which we've already talked about, can't be.
Yeah.
If that's going to be the norm for Lamar, is somewhere between 13 and 20 passes, you're going to have some pretty upset Diva wide receivers.
Yeah, no, I mean, you paid for these guys, and these guys were expected to be and have been thus far critical in situation. Snead has been one of the most critical wide receivers.
Absolutely.
On this team, getting big third down conversions. He had it again in this game where he has a third down conversion, turns up the field and drives his defender to get to the first down.
Yeah, that was huge.
Huge thing for him. But he only has 5 catches this game.
Yeah, and he was the leading receiver.
Exactly.
Right.
So, you know, that kind of shows the frustration. And while I heard somebody on the radio, this morning, go through and say, oh, well, these wide receivers, they were behind Lamar. They were behind him and excited for him being it for his first game.
Right.
They were not behind him and Marty Morningwig with all the running that they were doing.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I think what we've heard about Lamar is that a lot of the younger players, a lot of the rookie players and some of the first and second year players are excited to see what they can see in Lamar. But it's the veterans that are more on the side of, let's go with what we know in Joe. And we know that Joe could possibly get us there if he goes on the kind of run that he's gone on in the past.
Right.
You brought these 3 new wide receivers in who, again, John Brown, beginning of the year, started off great. I mean, you know, we were all talking about sign this guy now and what he's doing now. Like, it's just, haven't seen it. And he's just kind of, they've game planned for him and shut him down. Willie Snead, again, like you said, huge on third down conversions, and he's been great in extending drives. Well, you got to keep everybody happy. You got to keep everybody involved in the offense. You can't have these wide receivers running out, running routes all day long without getting any targets.
Yeah, no.
They're not going to commit, and they're not going to run the routes as aggressively as they should if they're not involved in the offense.
No, I mean, we talked about it last night when you and I were talking. These guys are paid to catch the ball and turn up field. They aren't paid to sit there and block all day. And that's it. When I say guys like Crabtree and Snead, those contracts, while NFL contracts are nothing like MLB contracts, they're still pretty decent. They're still pretty hefty.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So for them to not be getting the ball and being paid for what we really actually ultimately paid for them to do, that's a change of pace for them. That's a change of pace for the organization as a whole. And you got to make sure that you're committed to that. We committed money to these guys to be out there and ultimately catch the ball and get, if they get hurt catching the ball, that's a heck of a lot different than if they get hurt trying to protect Lamar. And that's because that's what it is. Right. Lamar turns up the field and gets out to the sideline and is run up the sideline. You think Willie Snead's going to really want to dive head first into somebody to get Lamar up there? I don't know that he is.
Right.
Because he's not, he didn't sign with that type of team.
Well, speaking of change of pace, you think we see a changing at the guard at the running back position after what we saw this week from Gus Edwards?
Not a full change of guard, but I think you start looking at it.
Yeah.
I think you have to see what he does against the Raiders first.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I think he had a great game. What was his stat line on that game?
I mean, 17 carries for 115 yards, and he had the touchdown. I mean, this guy was taking them. What I really liked about Edwards was he hit the hole and hit the hole hard.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't try to make anything bigger than what it was. He took what the defense was giving them, and he attacked. And that's something that we haven't seen from Alex Collins this year, and it's kind of been disappointing. You know, last year, that was what I liked about Alex Collins, was that, you know, he'd get the ball and he'd attack, and occasionally he would, you know, use his shiftiness to kind of make a big play or extend a play or, you know, make something out of nothing. But this year, it seems like every time he gets the ball, he's trying to make that big play. He's trying, you'll see him. He kind of does these stutter steps instead of just aggressively hitting the hole.
Right.
You know, he tries to make something bigger than it, you know, than what it should be. Because, I mean, let's face it, how often when Flacco was at quarterback, how often were they running the ball? They weren't running the ball very often. Flacco was throwing the ball 40, 50 times a game. So Alex was trying to take advantage of every opportunity that
every
he actually
carry
got,
he gets,
trying to get these big yardage gains. But now, obviously, with the change in quarterback and the change in philosophy, we're obviously going to see a lot more running than what we've been seeing all year so long.
Yeah.
And I think Gus Edwards, from everything that I've heard from, if you listen to Harbaugh and his press conference after the game, he talked highly of Edwards and said, you know, that this wasn't a start that we just handed him. This wasn't a game that we just handed him. He had to stack practices together, and he had to put performances during the week together. And he's been doing that not just for the past couple of weeks, but for the past couple of months.
Right.
And he's been showing it in practice, and now we're finally seeing it on the field.
We've seen flashes of the pan too. You and I talked, I remember a few weeks ago, we talked about Edwards when they brought him in and had him kind of starting running the ball a little bit more than they were Collins when they were running the ball with Joe. And we were seeing, that was the first thing that you and I both said. He hit that hole hard. Old school hard, you know, driving and continuing to churn those legs as he's getting hit and as he's driving through, which is what gets you those extra yardages. That's a type of running back, if he can sustain this type of performance, that's a type of running back that you aren't afraid to hand the ball to on third and one.
Absolutely.
You know, even third and three, maybe.
Right.
You know, you aren't afraid to do that if you have to, just to throw the defense off because they're probably looking pass, you know. So those type of situations is what you want him to be successful in, and he's kind of showing that. He needs to, just as you said with Harbaugh saying he needed to put the performances together in practice, he also needs to put these performances together in game.
Right.
So when it comes to the Raiders, show me what you can do against the Raiders. If you can do it against the Raiders, I'm buying in a little bit more. I'm saying, all right, good. Now I don't have to worry about Lamar running the ball as much. I don't have to worry about, you know, if he gets out. I can, you know, my one, I don't want to say even criticism, I'd like to see a little bit more dump off passes to him to see how he can handle that type of situation.
Right.
But I'd rather us not get there. I'd rather us be able to not have to worry about dumping the ball off.
Yeah, right.
But you know, that's the one question mark for him is his performance in those situations. But so far from what I've seen, I know it's only 115 yards, one TD, 17 carries.
It's pretty damn good.
It wasn't a bad game at all.
It's pretty damn good.
So,
and Lamar's ability to make plays with his feet changes how a defense lines up at the line, because you've got to always be aware of where Lamar is and his ability to quickly get outside the pocket and get to the edge. And that's exactly what Lamar was doing pretty much the entire game, was just running sideline to sideline, getting out to the edge and beating the defenders around the corner. If you've got a game plan for that and you got to keep defenders on the outside looking for that at all times, it really opens up lanes through the middle, and it's only going to help this running game get stronger.
Yeah, so we got plenty of people chiming in here on social media. By the way, everybody is saying Gus, because he's let him plow through north to south, highly impressed with Gus. Everybody is saying that they were, you know, they were very impressed with what they saw with Gus. I think that is kind of the subject and kind of leading in. You know, now we got the Raiders coming up.
Before we go to the Raiders really quickly, before we end on this, I just want one quick question. I didn't put this in the outline. I wanted to get your opinion on it. I don't even know if you saw it yet or not. Did you see the Marshall Yanda spitting incident on Vontaze Burfict?
I did.
Or the alleged spitting incident on Vontaze Burfict?
Yes, I did.
Okay. What's your take on it?
Clear. I hate to say it. I love Yanda. It's out of his character. He deserves to be fined. It was very clear when Yanda pulls his helmet up and you watch. It wasn't like a quick spit. It was a hawk a loogie and just let it fall on him. That loogie was about 3 to 4 inches long. Go look back and look at the video. I'm just saying it was pretty clear to me. It was intended. he's looking down as he's doing it. You can't not know that you're spinning. I understand it happens. You know, guys are like, you know, and they turn all crap. I guess when you're standing over the guy and you kind of like pull it up and he holds his helmet. That's what sold it for me. He held his helmet and kind of just, and you just watch it fall.
All right. I got a totally different perspective. I totally disagree with you.
Really?
Yeah. Totally different. Totally disagree. So you're a smaller guy. Right, you're a thin guy. You don't know what it's like to be a heavier guy, a bigger guy. Right, so for us bigger folk guys out there that were athletes or played any kind of sports, right? When we get to running and when we get to working up a sweat and we get our blood pressure up and we get our heart rate up, man, all kinds of bodily fluids start coming out of the mouth, start coming out of the nose. It's just. It can be nasty, especially out on a football field. Marshall Yanda is an offensive lineman. He's not the smallest guy.
No.
If you really watch the video, and I did. I watched the video a couple times. First glance, I kind of thought the same thing. I was like, at first, I was like, good on him because I can't stand Vontaze Burfict.
Nobody can stand Vontaze Burfict.
But then I looked at it, and I thought of myself, and I'm like, God, if I was in that situation and I was pissed off or something like that, I know what my mannerisms would be, and I know what my body movements would be and things of that nature. And there's nothing about it when you look at it that looks aggressive or even looks like he's that pissed off when he gets up. Yeah, the other players around him that were on top of Vontaze Burfict were pissed off. But he gets up and you just see this thing come out of his mouth. And actually, he pulls his left hand over. It almost looks to kind of wipe it away. I don't know Marshall Yanda personally. I don't see it in him to do something like that. Honestly, even if he did with intentions, I don't really give a crap because I cannot stand this guy and all the crap that he's done throughout his career.
Two wrongs do not make a right.
No, you're absolutely right. Two wrongs don't make a right. But if there's anybody in that league that deserves to be spit on, it's that guy. But I really, honestly, no, all joking aside, if you go back and watch the video, like I said, I mean, especially if you are dealing with any kind of like congestion or anything like that and you're out there working up a sweat and you're running around as a bigger guy, things just start coming out of the mouth and start coming out of the nose. So I don't think it was intentional. I don't want to spend too much time on it, but that's just my take on it because I know that they were talking about it a lot today and it's going around social media. But as you said, the Raiders come to town this week. John Gruden and the Khalil Mackless Raiders come to town, man.
How pissed are they right now with the way he's playing? I mean, come on.
I'm sure a lot of fans are pissed off, and I'm sure, you know, some players are probably upset with the situation internally, but obviously Gruden has some sort of master plan, and you know, he, you know, what's crazy is he's kind of stockpiling these picks. You know, yeah. He's got 3 first round picks going into next year, which is, you know, which is great. But he's historically never been a very good drafter. Like, and he, you know, when he was with Tampa Bay, he was heavily involved. And when he was with the Raiders the last time, he was heavily involved in the draft day process.
Yeah.
Never been a very good drafter.
No.
So big roll of the dice there, doing what they're doing, considering, in my opinion, they got rid of, if not the best defender in football right now, definitely top 2, top 3.
Yeah.
You know, I put him up there, right up there with Aaron Donald and, you know, some of these other guys. But nonetheless, Raiders coming to town at 2-8. You know, a guy that Derek Carr, who started out his career on the right note, but the wheels have kind of fallen off there in Las Vegas now, I guess, or Oakland still, or whatever they want to be called.
To me, with Carr, it comes down to you got to have the tools for him.
Right.
You know, it was kind of, I'm not going to make this full comparison, but I'll kind of say it's a similar situation to what we said about Flacco. When Flacco has the, you know, if you give him the weapons, what can he do with them?
Right.
You know, and when he has the strong weapons, Derek Carr can be a little bit of a threat. Mm-hmm. I think he's in the wrong place. I think you're going to find him, you know, he needs to go somewhere with a strong offensive-minded head coach,
right?
You know, a Sean McVay-esque, an Andy Reid-esque type coach, Heggy in Chicago. Mm-hmm. You know where Khalil Mack went. Maybe he can join up with Khalil Mack in Chicago. I don't know about, you know, Mitch Trubisky's got the worst, you know, throwing arm I've ever seen, but somehow he's making it work.
He's doing pretty good out there in Chicago.
It's the weapons that he has. You know,
it's weapons and his ability to extend plays. I mean, he's one thing I think was underestimated about Trubisky was his ability to make plays with his feet and extend plays, and he's done a really good job of that so far in his career.
And Carr historically has shown flashes of that, flashes in the pan of being able to do that. So if he has the offensive line to be able to help him a little bit, give him a little bit more time, if he has the threats and the weapons at wide receiver, I mean, you get rid of
Amari Cooper,
you got rid of his biggest threat. What do you expect a guy to do? At this point?
Amari Cooper's been pretty disappointing. He came into the league with a lot of hype coming out of Alabama, put up good numbers his first couple years in the league, but he's kind of dropped off a lot in production.
Think some of that's sourness? I mean, you don't think some of that sourness with the
absolutely. I don't know enough internally, like what goes on, obviously within their locker room and you know that kind of thing. But there was problems there, and Gruden, for him to be able to get a first round pick for Amari Cooper,
yeah.
I take that trade 10 times over.
Absolutely. No, I mean, not denying it, but I don't know that Derek Carr is the fit, you know, for that offense. Right. I wouldn't be surprised to see if the Raiders go for a first or second rounder this year and potentially get rid of Derek Carr. I don't even know when his contract's up, when he's a free agent. I don't know if he's a free agent this year or next year. Yeah, I know, sure, it's probably coming up sooner, I'm sure. But yeah, no, they're either going to trade him or he'll be a free agent at some point, one of the two. And I don't think he's gonna stay in Oakland. I don't think it's the right fit for him either.
Well, with the Raiders coming to town, I think the big thing that we want to see is we obviously want to see the pressure. We talked about that. The pressure start to get ramped up a little bit. We need to get to Carr. We got to make him uncomfortable. I want to see 4 or 5 sacks in this game.
Yeah.
I mean, we've had a couple games here, sackless or one sack. We need to be 4 to 5 sacks in this game. The Raiders offensive line outside of Osemele, they're really not that great. So we should be able to get the Carr pretty well.
Yeah.
On the offensive side of the ball, as far as Lamar goes, we just want to see him take that next step. How does he go from game one to game two now that they've got some tape on him? You know, obviously Marty Mordingwig has got to change the play calling up. You know, we can't see this guy like we talked about earlier. We can't see him run the ball 27 times.
No, you can't.
It's just not good for him in so many ways, future and short-term and long-term.
Right, exactly.
And I want to see more Gus Edwards. You know, I mean, what we saw here in this game was great, but can he put back-to-back games together? Can this offense transition more from, you know, what it was with Flacco throwing the ball 40 times a game and us rushing the ball 10 times? Can we rush the ball 30 times as a team and maybe get Lamar somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 to 25 passes and really get to see a little bit more of what Lamar can do from the pocket and actually throwing the ball?
Absolutely. You know, here's the overall my way of summing up what I want to see.
Yep.
I don't want to see what I feel like many fans, and you and I may differ on this, but I may be slightly included in this, what we've seen from typical Ravens. And what I mean by the typical Ravens is we make games with bad teams look way too close.
Right.
Cincinnati, like you said it, they're having one of the worst defensive years in Cincinnati in a long time.
NFL history.
Yeah. And we were only able to put up 24 points against them.
Yeah. Definitely 24 points when you put up over 400 yards of offense. It's alarming.
Yeah. No, it's absolutely alarming. I mean, you think, okay, there should at least be, if I'm doing basic math here, right, 400 yards, 4 touchdowns.
Yeah, there should have been at least one, maybe even 2 more touchdowns in this game. And absolutely.
That's my point. I'm not saying that, like, for every 100 yards, you should have a touchdown. But it's pretty close.
Yeah.
I mean, you should be, if you were getting down the field and you can't finish, that's a problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
You
know,
and you can drive 99 yards. If you don't get that extra yard, what does it do? It puts 3 points on the board. Great. But you need to finish the drive. And that's what I want to see. I want to see them continue to finish the drive on the offensive ball, on the side of the ball, on the defensive. Like you said, I want to see the sacks. I want to see the more pressure. I do not want to see them let off the throttle and keep the throttle to the throat,
right,
of the Raiders. I don't care if it's a blowout. Bring Bob in on offense. I don't care.
Right.
But it needs to be the Ravens that we expect
them
to be.
4 quarters of football.
It needs to be the Ravens that we expect them to be, not the Ravens that we've seen historically
yeah.
against bad teams. I'm just, that's where I stand with it. So,
all right, man. Well, that's where we're at. So let's get into our predictions. We'll talk a little bit about last week's predictions, which did not go, did not go very well for me. As I go 2-2 in these predictions, me and Ryan both had the Ravens. You had the Bengals winning that game.
Yeah.
Thursday night football, we saw the Packers and the Seahawks in a very good game. As Seahawks pulled that one out 27-24, the wheels kind of falling off there in Green Bay. Aaron Rodgers and Mike McCarthy, I don't think, are on the same page there.
No, I don't know what's going on in Green Bay right now. They kind of hit this plateau slash like you're on the edge of a cliff here.
Right.
You got to figure it out.
Ryan was the only one to pick the Seahawks in that, so both you and I got that pick wrong. Sunday Night Football had the Vikings at the Bears. This was probably the best slate of primetime games for an entire week. This was a really good slate of games.
Absolutely.
Sunday night had the Vikings at the Bears. Bears end up pulling that one out 25-20. Both Ryan and I got that one right, as you had the Vikings winning that one. And then last night, so for you guys out there that don't know, Scott and I actually do a live commentary stream on YouTube now for Monday night football games. And we did that last night. Had a lot of fun doing it. We went into it expecting this to be a high-powered, high-offensive game. And, man, we were not disappointed.
No, we're going to talk about it later. Don't get too much.
Yeah,
I got a two-minute warning.
The Chiefs at 9-1 go into L.A., and go into L.A., not Mexico City, because Shakira was shaking her hips a little too hard down there in Mexico.
Yeah, right?
Got that field all screwed up. But the Rams pull it off late, 54-51, in what was the highest scoring game in Monday Night Football history.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. I think I was the closest one here. I had the Chiefs winning, though, 42-40. I had it as close as far as point spread go, but I didn't get the game right. You were the only one to get the game right. You went with the Rams 29-20, and Ryan went with the Chiefs 41-35.
I tell you what, though, it was a close game. Period.
It was a close game. It was a great game. Very entertaining game.
Yeah, we had fun, and we're going to be doing those Monday Night Football games going forward. So be sure to tune in. I know we have a few people that have. I know Ryan has messaged us. I know James been in there for a few of them. Yeah. We've actually had people say they've sat there and watched the game and sync up to our commentary. Yeah. So we appreciate that.
They had over 5,000 people watch that last night. So impressive. Yeah. Can't thank each and every one of you enough for tuning in.
Yeah, it was awesome, man.
But getting into this week's game predictions, we got a lot of games to go over. Obviously, this being Gobble Gobble Week, this being Thanksgiving Week, we got three Thanksgiving games to cover. But let's go into the Ravens and the Ravens predictions here first. Ravens play Sunday at 1 o'clock against the Raiders, as we just talked about. I think the Ravens win this one pretty easily. I think the defense comes up with another big performance in this game. Ravens win this one 27-17. Ryan's also on board with the Ravens at 21-11. What do you got, Scott?
I've got the Ravens as well. I have it a little bit higher on the Ravens side, and as well as the Raiders side for this game. I do have it 30-21. The 21, I went with that because I feel like we're not going to see that fourth quarter out of the Ravens. I have to look at it historically. That's right. How they've been. So I'm just going with it. I think they're still going to pull it out. I think the offense, and I think the defense does come up. I'm going to say the defense is going to get a score in this game. Potentially a pick six against Derek Carr.
Be good to see.
Yeah,
that's absolutely. Another thing that's been kind of down is the amount of turnovers that the Ravens have gotten. Yeah. So I'd like to see that as well.
Yeah.
First game on Thursday starts early, 12:30 kickoff. You got the Bears at 7-3 going in against the Lions at 4-6. This game I had a little bit tougher time picking than I thought I would. And the only reason I say that is because there have been some question marks about Trubisky. Trubisky's got some shoulder issues.
Yeah.
So he's not 100%, and he may not even play this week. And if that's the case, that's a totally different looking team without Trubisky than it is with. But I'm going to go on the side that Trubisky does play, and I'm going to take the Bears to win this 28-23. Ryan also has the Bears 23-14. Which way do you
got
to go?
I've got the Bears. I've got a 24-17, so not far off. I'm like kind of in the middle of you and Ryan here. I think you're right. I think it's just what I've seen out of the Bears, and Higgy, the head coach there, has been, again, we keep saying it, this is an offensive game now with the way the rules have been adjusted and things like that. It's an offensive game. And so I think you're going to see that, but the Bears just pull it out, I think, by one score.
All right, so the middle game on Thursday's got the Redskins, the Alex Smithless Redskins. If you didn't get a chance to watch that, don't.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, he broke his leg last week in the game, and I mean it was nasty. And there,
not too
crazy,
much. It's in my 2 minute warning. Don't.
Okay. All right. I won't save it for you. All right. So the Redskins at 6-4 go into Dallas to take on the Cowboys at 5-5. Dallas starting to kind of get things together. Ezekiel Elliott kind of looking more like the back that they originally drafted. And that's why I'm going with the Cowboys in this game. I've got the Cowboys winning 24-20, as does Ryan 21-17. Looks like Ryan and
he's upgraded the Ryan.
Ryan and I have the same picks pretty much for this entire slate of games. What do you got going?
Me, look, I'm going to go Redskins here 17-15, and here's why I'm saying this. There's Colt McCoy hasn't played a down in a while. I think the Cowboys are going to be a little off guard, especially in the first half. I think they'll turn it around in the second half and be able to play a little bit more defense. But I just don't see the Cowboys being able to tackle the Redskins defense as well.
Right.
Redskins defense has some holes here and there, but they've been pretty well throughout the season. So I mean, there's a reason they're 6-4, and Alex Smith is part of that reason. But there's more to it than that. So for me, I think it's I'm just giving it as a flip of the coin. Here's what's gonna happen. There's not a lot of tape on him as a Redskin. See what happens.
I will say this though, like he's a players quarterback. Like the players love him. The players rally around him. That's another reason that I was kind of like on the edge of whether I go Redskins or Cowboys here. But like you said, it's been a while since he's played. He came in here. He threw a touchdown. You know, with Alex Smith out, he you know played decently. But yeah, I like I said, I just think the Cowboys end up pulling this one out.
I can't. It was a hard one. I kind of was like, okay, I figured you would go Cowboys. So I was like, all right, let's go Redskins. So
late night, Thursday night, 8:20 kickoff. We got the 4-6 Falcons going into New Orleans to take on the red hot New Orleans Saints at 9-1. You and I talked a lot about this last night on our Monday Night Football stream. I really think the Saints are primed for a strong, strong Super Bowl run.
Yeah.
It's going to end up coming down to them. And I think the Rams and the NFC. But I've got the Saints winning this one pretty easily, 40-28. Ryan there as well with a 10-point spread, 34-24. What do you got?
I got a 15-point spread at 36-21, so all right. Saints for me as well.
Sunday Night Football's got the struggling Packers at 4-5-1 going into Minnesota to take on the Vikings at 5-4-1. Yeah, Packers are struggling, but they're not too far out of it in this division, like we talked about with the Bears being at 7-3 and the Vikings at 5-4-1. I think you get to see an angry and motivated Rodgers. And I think Rodgers goes into Minnesota and he pulls out a win 27-24. Again, Ryan on the same page with me. He's got the Packers winning 28-14. What do you got?
For me, I've got it going the other way. I've got it Vikings.
Of course you do.
I've got it Vikings 30-21. And I look, this was a tough one for me when I was sitting there looking at this game. I'm sitting there saying, okay, how do they handle it? But I think Cousins and the Vikings have something to prove after the loss, the 5-point loss to the Bears. I think they're going to come back. I think Cousins is not happy with the full performance there of him and his offensive line and just the offense in general. Mm-hmm. So that's why I think it's going to be 30-21. I think they're going to come back with a little bit more of a vengeance. I don't know that Aaron Rodgers, I think they maybe fall off the cliff in this game. I think Aaron Rodgers only gets, you know, and the offense only get 21 points as a team. I don't think it's going to bode well for them. So that's why I went with the Vikings.
All right. Monday Night Football has got the, 5-5 Titans, which I don't think Mariota's playing in this game, going into Houston to take on another very hot team in the Texans at 7-3. Started off the year slow. Deshaun Watson kind of coming back from the injury, I think, you know, had to work through some things there, but starting to hit their stride offensively, even after losing Will Fuller to the injury and all that stuff, have still picked it up. You know, they've got a great defense with that two-headed monster and J.J. Watt and Jadeveon Clowney there. I think the Texans win this one easily, 30-17. Ryan also there with the Texans at 33-13. Do you agree with us on this one at least?
I at least agree with you on this one. All right. No way Mariota and the Titans beat the Texans. 27-17 is my score on this one.
All right. It's time for a social media shout out.
Shout out.
Social media shout out. What do you got over there?
We got a ton of people that have been watching, not only on YouTube, but we've actually had a lot of people start to chime in on Twitter. So we've had okay Kerrigan has joined us on Twitter. Hector de Prince.
All right.
Let's see who else. I know we had somebody else in here that was commenting. Biggie Carr was in there.
Biggie.
Yeah, so we appreciate all you guys watching. Those are the ones I just can see because it like scrolls through a bunch of them. So
on Facebook, Scott, you're over there watching.
I am.
That's kind of weird. Nikki, I see you. What's up, Nikki? Ryan, appreciate the correction on the spelling there. I'm very hard on myself about that stuff, so yeah. I appreciate that, brother. Sherry, good to see you. As always, thank you for all your insight and takes and opinions. James, as always, brother, see you in the room. And that's it as far as that I can see that have been chiming in. I know we got Sam on YouTube, which good to see you, brother. Wish you were there last night through the live stream. You always give us great feedback and great commentary throughout the night. Yeah. Hopefully we'll see you this week. Danny, I see you. Troy, good to see you, brother. Haven't paid attention to much of how you're working out in the Birdland BS League, so you'll have to give us an update there. Marlon, appreciate you and appreciate your question about the CJ Mosley. So all you guys that are interacting with us on all the social media platforms, we appreciate it for sure.
Yeah, we appreciate it, guys. And we appreciate all the shares. You know, everybody's sharing. We got a few shares on Twitter, a few retweets on Twitter, a few shares on Facebook. Those are YouTubers out there, you know, feel free to share.
Hit that subscribe button. Hit that thumbs up. We appreciate you guys tuning in.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
So speaking of Ryan, your buddy Ryan Schammel, and now my buddy Ryan Schammel, friend of the show.
Yeah.
Huge shout out to Ryan and his family for the ticket hookup over the weekend.
Treated you well, my friend.
Treated me and my buddy Joe very, very well over the weekend as he took us to, we went to the Terps game, but not just went to the Terps game, which was a phenomenal, phenomenal experience just going to the game in itself. But so I talked about it a little earlier with my watch kind of going in overload over this weekend. So we get there probably, I'd say, like 9:30-ish, between 9:30 and 10 o'clock in the morning. So we had about two and a half hours before kickoff because they kick off at 12. And Ryan being really familiar with the campus and everything, I thought, you know, let's down a couple beers. Let's take a couple beers with us. And let's walk around campus a little bit, take in some of the sights, go see some of the things. And we did, man. And we kept going and going and going.
Campus is bigger than you think, ain't it?
And stopping and taking pictures and going here and going there. Next thing I know, my watch is screaming at me. What are you doing, fat boy?
you can't handle this.
I'm getting award after award. I look down and I got a bronze award. I'm like, what the hell is that for? I look down, I get a silver award. I'm like, what is that for? It's all for all these steps that I'm taking that this watch like apparently has never seen before. It's like, oh my God, dude, you're about to have a heart attack. Please sit down. Take it easy. We literally walked like 6.8 miles, according to my phone. Now, the other thing that I wasn't anticipating, so the entire time we're walking and everything, I'm actually doing fine because I'm so excited about seeing everything that I'm seeing and, you know, going through. I mean, we went through everything.
This is your first time at UMD, right?
I've been to UMD a few times, but it's been a very long time since I've been there.
Gotcha.
Really, since like the Lamont Jordan and the some of the Ralph Friedgen era was the last time I was there. So we got to see a lot of things. We got to see the new Cole Fieldhouse. We got to see, you know, the weight room and how mammoth that is now. And we got to see the baseball field and some of the changes that they've made there. And we got to see the old Cole Fieldhouse floor and some of the we got to see the national championship trophy from, you know, the basketball's year 2001. So we just got to see a lot of stuff. Once I got to the stadium and once we started talking about going into the stadium, I'm thinking, man, now my legs hurt. Like I wasn't paying attention. I can't wait to sit down. Right. Yeah. No,
you stand the whole game.
You stand the entire game, which I was okay with considering this was the most entertaining college football game I've ever been to.
I wasn't there, but it was an amazing game and actually one of the top rated games in all of college football season.
Instant classic. I mean, it started literally from opening kickoff until the last play of the game in overtime, going for the win on a 2-point conversion. He had Piggy had the guy wide open.
Yeah.
Wide open, and he misses him. But before we get into that, let's talk a little bit about this game and the phenom that is Anthony McFarlane.
Man, what a game for him.
Oh,
this I'm sitting there watching on TV being like, dude, are we witnessing like, you know, the next top running back? He tell you what, he could be, if he continues on, plays like he did against an offense or a defense like Ohio State.
Yeah.
Sky's the limit.
Ryan and I talked about it, you know, going into the game, the game that he had prior, he had over 200 yards rushing. And we were talking about the potential of him. And, you know, he needs to put on a little bit of weight if he wants to be a pro. But he could very easily be Maryland's all-time leading rusher when all said and done, without question.
Yeah, no.
21 carries for 298 yards in this game, second most in school history. He had the two touchdowns. He had two rushes in the very beginning of the game, first quarter, one of 81 yards and one of 75 yards. The guy had like over 150 yards rushing in the first quarter alone.
That's 75 yarder. I know the 75 yarder was a beauty.
Yeah. And this kid, I mean, the amount of speed that he has, I saw a stat out there. The guys that the guys that do sports science for ESPN, they clocked him at 21.56 mile an hour, which would be the second fastest in the NFL this season behind only Dalvin Cook.
That's a number.
That's a number. And this kid, is he a freshman? Freshman or sophomore?
I think he might be a sophomore. Ryan would probably... We need Ryan to chime in.
I can't remember off the top of my head if he's a freshman or sophomore, but this kid is the absolute real deal.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. I mean, huge game. Like you said, second most in school history.
Yeah, he's a freshman.
He's a freshman. There you go. So, yeah. So, I mean, for me, such a huge game. The running game has been huge for Maryland this season.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Huge. And you've had another injury, and Ant McFarland has just stepped up.
1,022 yards on the year.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, he's ridiculously off the charts, playing above and beyond what Maryland, I think, in my opinion, what Maryland probably expected out of him.
Right.
Because they expected to be this season to be a running back by committee type season, and it started that way. But Ant McFarland was handed the ball, and he never looked back.
No.
He hasn't looked back.
You know, there was a little bit of a scare. I think it was like late in the third quarter.
Ryan says redshirt freshman.
Yeah, redshirt freshman. That's why I couldn't remember if he was a freshman or sophomore. I knew he'd been there 2 years, but he's redshirt. That's right. Appreciate that. Yeah, but so there was a scare late in the third quarter where he had made a run and went down, and they came out on the field, and they kind of escorted him off the field. He did come back late. So there was, you know, he had 298 yards rushing, but there was a little bit of a lull time where he wasn't even on the field.
Yeah, no.
This guy easily would have rushed for 350 had he been on the field all game. But it wasn't just about Anthony McFarland. As great of a game as he had, this was kind of, in some ways, a coming out party for Terrell Pigram.
Piggy can throw the ball.
He can throw the ball. Now, granted, he didn't throw the ball a whole lot. I mean, he was only 6 of 13. But those six completions that he had...
181 yards.
Yeah, one huge. TD. I mean, every ball that he threw deep downfield, money. Money shot.
I think... Ryan, you may be able to correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I think all six completions were to the left side. There may have been one to the right, but most of them were to the left.
I definitely remember a deep ball down the right hand side, like in the front corner of the end zone.
Okay.
But the majority of it may have been the left side. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I mean, look, like I said, he didn't throw the ball a whole lot. He had 13 passes. He was only, you know, completion percentage was under 50%. He only had six completions, but those six completions, he took his shots and he threw them with accuracy
right over the shoulder.
The only couple of knocks that I had on him is he tends to hold the ball a little too long, and he gets a little too jittery with his feet, you know, trying to make plays and trying to extend plays, where sometimes he should just get rid of the ball, throw the ball away, throw it out of bounds instead of taking the sack.
Yeah.
You know, again, he's a shorter guy. Ryan and I were talking about, I think he's only like 5'8". You know, so he's kind of almost got to be a little bit mobile because he's got to get around his offensive linemen to be able to throw the ball. You know, it kind of has that Doug Flutie syndrome where he doesn't have the height to be able to throw over top of his offensive
not
line.
A,
he's kind of
not a tall guy
edges.
At all.
No, not a tall guy at all.
Ryan says the right one was NOT, by the way.
Right, right. Absolutely. Yeah. You're right. That's right. There were some interesting things kind of going on. And I give a lot of credit to Matt Canada. I think what he's done this season, rallying the troops around what's been a very, very, there's that word again, tumultuous. God, I can't, I thought I was going to be able to get it.
Tumultuous.
Tumultuous year.
Tumultuous.
Tumultuous. I said word. Limit. Speed limit. Tumultuous year. He's been able to keep the troops together. He's gotten 5 wins. Ryan and I were talking about this. You know, you go in against number 10 team in the country and you, yes, you lose, but you take them to overtime.
And you put up 51 points.
You put up 51 points. There were 3 teams last year that made a bowl game as 5 win teams. I wonder if this was enough.
With a win over the number 10 team in the country, it's quite possible.
No. If they would have won this game...
With a loss, a high-scoring loss.
Right. Keeping it that close, taking
the point
number 10 to overtime, and really only losing it because you decided to take the risk and go for the two-point conversion and go for the win, which he had wide open and missed the throw.
Yeah.
But yeah, there were some interesting things that I didn't really like in this game. You know, as much good as there was in this game, I'm kind of nitpicking at some things here.
Are you nitpicking because you had your Ohio State on underneath? let's be real, Fred.
Hey, Ryan.
Let's be real.
Ryan, you were there next to me the entire game. I cheered for one team and one team only the entire game. Even though I did have my Ohio State jersey underneath my sweatshirt, I did root for the Terps and the Terps only. But yeah, so the offensive line was making some interesting shifts that I didn't really understand. They were pulling the right tackle and moving him over to the left side of the line. And it was like almost every time that they did that, pressure came from that right side. You know, you do it once, you do it twice, you think you'd learn, but it was like every time they did that, the play was blown up.
Yeah.
And so that, again, It's you're just leaving Piggy a little bit exposed. It sucks because I'm nitpicking at what was an amazing game, an amazing effort by the Terps. This week, though, they go in against Penn State, the 12th ranked team in the country, their last game of the year. I think in this game, they may be able to keep this close just as much as they did against Ohio State, and hopefully pull off an upset at Penn State. What do you think?
For me, you know, Penn State's favorite in this game, obviously. If they can do what they did in Ohio State, against Ohio State, I'm sorry, it's going to be another game for the ages.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a game that could, if they keep this close, win or lose, I think they're in a bowl game.
Yeah, and that's exactly what Ryan and I were talking about. You know, again, there were 3 teams that get in with 5 wins last year. And if you play Ohio State as tough as you played Ohio State, you've already beaten a ranked team and you beat Texas in the first game of the year.
Yeah.
If you play Penn State close, hopefully they beat Penn State and that, you know, that just
solidifies it
and ends the whole conversation. They get a bowl, you know, bowl win or bowl game. But if they can keep this game close and you held the number 10 team to a 1-point game in overtime and you do the same thing against the number 12 team in the country, you got a pretty strong resume for making a bowl.
Yeah, absolutely. You're less than 6 wins, but you held your own when it mattered.
Right. And when you look at this matchup, and yes, Penn State's favored by 13.5, But when you look at the statistics, you look at the breakdown of yardage in this game, they're actually pretty evenly matched as far as how much yardage they put up a game, how much yardage they give up a game.
Yeah.
You know, obviously they're two totally different teams, but just looking at the numbers, they actually match up pretty well on paper. I guess the big thing's going to be is, can McFarland put a third game together?
God, I sure
and
hope
put
so.
Up those kind of numbers like he put up. If he can put up another 150 yards or 150 plus in this game, I like Maryland's chances to keeping this game close.
Ryan brings up a good point. Ohio State was favored by the same amount
exactly,
as well.
Exactly, yeah. Right. And I, honestly, if you go back and you watch the feed last week, I thought Ohio State would win this game by 20 or more.
Oh, yeah. I think everybody did. Everybody originally thought that it was, you know, not that we don't support the Terps, but we were trying to be real.
Just being real.
In the way that they were playing some of the holes. But look, the bounces were going our way, and I'm not going to complain about that.
We're standing up there. The players are running out the tunnel, and, you know, Ryan's standing next to me, and he's cheering, you know, as the players come out, and he's yelling, "Shock the world! Shock the world!" And the entire time I'm sitting there thinking, not going to happen, buddy. Like, as much as I want to see the Terps win, this guy's not being a realist. But, man, did they prove me wrong.
I'll tell you,
did they
prove me wrong? Ryan's been around that team enough.
Yeah.
You know, him and his family have had those tickets for such a long time.
Awesome seats. Amazing seats.
Yeah, and they've... He knows that team. He sees the things that they don't show on TV. Just like, you know, at the Ravens games, you're seeing things. When I go, I'm seeing things that they don't show on TV, that you're not seeing on TV.
Right.
And that's the stuff that can really give you a little bit more insight into these teams and into what's going on and what's happening.
Well, I think it's time that we move on. And I'm only saying this because we're already kind of an hour and 15 minutes into the show. Yeah. And another big topic kind of going
Shamble
around.
Shamble says Haskins sucks, by the way.
Oh, he yelled that all game long. Any opportunity he got to yell at Haskins' ear, he was yelling at Haskins' ear.
I believe it. No.
It was great.
No, was Ryan, great. I believe that.
Ryan had some good stories, man. Good guy. Hopefully we can hang out again.
If we're shifting gears, talk about our organization that made a move that appears at this point in time that they are doing the same.
Yep.
The Orioles announce Mike Elias, former assistant GM for the Astros, as the executive vice president and GM of the Orioles.
Yeah, and this is the guy that you and I talked about for a long time. We said that we wanted to see
The guy under the Astros,
the young assistant under the Astros, under the Rays, somebody somewhere who brings a lot to the table as far as analytics go and as far as scouting goes. And they absolutely hit a home run with this one. Mike Elias, 36 years old. He's my age.
Yeah.
My age.
He does not look it.
He's got a little bit better of a job title than I do. A little bit better.
He also has a little bit more gray hair, Fred.
He does have a little bit more of a gray hair. I will say that.
He takes salt and pepper at 36 to a whole new level.
He absolutely does. But this guy, I mean, he's got a very, very impressive resume. First of all, he does have ties to the area.
Yeah.
I mean, he was born and raised in Alexandria, Virginia. He went to Thomas Jefferson High School. He graduated from Yale, an Ivy League school, so the guy's got the smarts. He did pitch for Yale as well, so he did play at the college level.
They did talk about that, by the way, during the press conference with Lou and John Angelos.
Right.
You know, both being, I forget what the damn term is, that when you're Ivy League. Both coming from Ivy League schools. They said they all went to different ones. They felt like they needed to round it out with another Ivy League guy.
Yeah, one went to Harvard, one went to Duke, and then one went to Yale.
Yeah,
so they got some pretty impressive degrees at the upper end of that system there.
Absolutely.
But at 36 years old, he did start his career in baseball as a scout for the St. Louis Cardinals back in 07 before heading to Houston, as you mentioned, where he became the director of amateur scouting in 2011. So he did that for a few years with Houston, got really heavily involved in the international scouting. He's actually credited with selecting Carlos Correa.
Not a bad selection.
Pretty darn good pick back in 2012 out there in Houston. So in 16, he was promoted to assistant GM, where he was given oversight of all player development and minor league operations, and was just banging down at the door for his opportunity for a job like this. And, you know, I don't know if you actually got a chance to watch the press conference.
Oh, I watched the whole thing live.
I watched it live. I watched the entire thing.
I shouldn't say I fully watched it because I was working, so I was listening to it most of the time.
If my boss is listening, close your ears, earmuffs right now. Yeah, I watched the entire thing while I was at work, and I have no qualms about that. But in his press conference, there were a few things that really caught my attention about this guy. And one thing, the obvious, is you went from one guy in Dan Duquette who was like this, a guy that was just super, super impressive. Didn't fumble over his words, like very clear and very direct on what his plans are and what his kind of progression of things is going to be.
I've got to bring it up because you talk about that.
Yeah.
I loved his response when he was asked if he was going to bring the guy. I forget the guy's name, and it's going to kill me. The guy that was under him in Houston that used to actually work for NASA, good with the numbers. It begins with an S, and I can't. Shahid or something like that. I want to say is the name. Something right along those lines. But he said, he gets asked the question, are you planning to bring him? And his response was, well, I know talking about free agents is a little frowned upon. So we're going to do everything we can. You basically just told us, he's coming on board, didn't actually say. You basically said, I got to work out the details of him coming on board, but he's on. Like, no problem.
So, I mean, when they started talking to him about that kind of stuff and they started asking him about specifics, one of the obvious big things that people are curious about is the manager position, right? There's been some rumors out there about Espada, the bench coach in Houston, and him bringing him along as the manager here, which I think would be a good fit. Obviously, he knows this guy very well, and he's well respected around the league. So I think that'd be a good fit. But again, he's got to kind of watch what he says, because you don't want to get any kind of trouble there. But he did say very clearly that the process
has already been started.
It's already started. It's already underway. But he's not in a rush. They asked him if it was detrimental for them to name a manager by the winter meetings.
Right.
And as much as I'm sure he wants to have that in place, he said he's not a guy that operates on artificial deadlines, like that he wants to go through the process and give it its due diligence and really make sure that it's the right fit. Just as much as ownership took the time in evaluating all the prospects and all the options that they had for this job. Now he's got to do that same thing in picking his field generator. Right. So there's no rush, basically, was the message that I was getting from him on that. Then, obviously there were questions about current roster and, certain specific names. Chris Davis's name was thrown out there and all that. And he did say that there are some roster decisions that he has to make in the next coming couple of days that obviously he's already in the process of figuring those out, which is good. I mean, he's literally hit the ground running with that.
Yeah, well, he also said in reference to that, he was also talking about the fact that his words were, look, I've got many contacts around the league, and I don't doubt that, this guy is the guy that comes in with contacts versus a guy like Duquette who came in. Look, Duquette, some of the things I think that happened with Duquette were, we've talked about it, were as a partial result of moves that Andy McPhail made.
Right.
But Duquette did make some moves and did do some things that got us to the playoffs. So I am going to give him a little bit of credit there.
Right.
But he was also out of the game for a little bit when he came back in. This guy's fresh. He comes out of an organization that just came out of a World Series a year ago, mm-hmm. And is in a strong suit that they made another run this year.
Right.
And so that he's coming from that background. That's what I think really drove, because it's so new, mm-hmm. I think that's what drove Lou and John to make this decision and make this call. And I think it's the turning of the page that we're seeing Lou and John. Lou and John, the past year or two, it felt like they were more just the front and Angelos's puppets.
Yeah.
Peter's puppets. Peter's puppets. I like that. But now I think they have moved into that role and Peter has given them that, maybe you guys need to pull the strings.
Yeah. And I mean, with his declining health and everything, I think that
it's the right move.
It's obviously the right move. And you can see the difference in mindset. They basically said it without saying it, that they're paying this guy to make baseball decisions and that they're going to be as hands-off as possible with it, that they are ultimately the owners, but at the end of the day, they're paying this guy for a reason, and he is going to run all of baseball operations for him.
I did like one thing from ownership standpoint that I did hear out of them. They were asked the question, with this move, understanding that, yes, you were putting him in charge and giving him full control.
Right.
Still yet to be seen on that. Mm-hmm. I'll wait and make my decision once I start seeing some of these moves. But when it comes to them, are they going to be, is this a changing of the guard? Is this a new era for, and they kept using that specific terminology, a new era in Baltimore. And one of the questions was asked, are they going to be more readily available? Because Angelos Peter has always shied away from the media when it comes to the Orioles. He'll let a few people here and there know, but that's it.
Right.
And their response was a little long-winded at first, but then John finally came out and said, or I think it was, yeah, it's John. I think it was John that said it, said, yes, we will be more available to the media in regards, and to the media and our fans in regards to these teams.
Yeah, that's awesome. Because, I mean, Angelos, talking Peter, has been so far detached from the media for so long, it would be nice. You know, that's one thing I will say I like about Bisciotti is that, you know, the owner of the Ravens, is that he's hands-on enough that he gets involved when he needs to, and right. he's not shy away from having a press conference where literally it was just him out there in the press conference answering all the media's questions, and he's not too hands-on like a Jerry Jones or like
right.
a Daniel Snyder or any of those guys. He's a good balance, and I'm hoping that's kind of what we see out of the Angelos brothers moving forward. But some of the other things that he talked about, and obviously the big thing that I wanted to hear was, in the forefront of his mind, he's going to start making hires around upgrading the analytical department and possibly international scouting. Like, these are going to be some of the things that he addresses early on and first, because, I mean, he made a multitude of points with saying that basically you got to tap into every resource available to you.
Yeah.
You can't pick and choose where you're going to pull talent from. There's talent everywhere.
Yeah.
You got to be out there actively scouting and actively recruiting that talent. And like you said, he's got to be in the tenure that he had in Houston and the tenure that he had in St. Louis. He has a lot of connections in those markets. So where we were kind of spinning our wheels because we were tapping into a market with Duquette and Buck there in the last couple of months of their tenure here, you know, going after the Mesa brothers and those guys, for instance, they had no grounds to stand on because they were never involved in that market. And they were all of a sudden trying to dive in head first and go after the big boys. And it's no wonder that they ended up in Miami. Now you've got somebody in there who has the history, who has the connections, and he's going to bring in a staff that helps build around that. And obviously it took a few years in Houston, but he's done it and it's worked.
Yeah.
So good and glad to hear that. He did say another thing I think that I was kind of curious about, and I think a lot of people were curious about, was a lot of the current staff members, one in particular, Brady.
Yeah.
In my opinion, Brady just needs to be gone from the organization altogether or be a nutritionist, something that he's good at. This whole, like,
for a 50-year-old guy, I'll give him credit. He's got a good body for a 50-year-old
guy.
That's
so cool.
if he wants to sell
magazines, go sell protein shakes,
let him be part of the strength and conditioning team.
That's fine. Okay, but make that his role.
Exactly.
This whole thing where he was involved in this and involved in that and involved in this and he had a role in that and he didn't have a defined title.
Assistant to this, but right. he's actually does this. And yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like
exactly.
That's got to end. Like, that whole era's got to end. If you're going to keep him under wraps. Keep him at one spot.
Right.
But he did say that no decisions have been made on any of the current executives, that actually he's going to lean kind of heavily on some of those guys, including Brady, because those are the ones that know this team, know this, you know, this staff and the minor league players. Now, granted, he was very complimentary of some of the moves that Duquette made right before he left.
He was.
Obviously, the big moves being getting rid of some of the expiring contracts and some of the big names that were going to bring back some prospects. And I think that he even said that that was one of the attractive pieces of the job was some of the pieces that they already have in place here for the future growth of this organization, which to me spoke volumes. If this guy honestly didn't believe that or didn't see that, he just would have never brought that up.
Yeah,
he would have never said that. So, and this is a guy that, albeit I don't really know a whole lot about him other than what I've heard, I respect his opinion.
Yeah, for me, the other thing that stood out, you know, you talk about that and all of his connections. This guy, up until last year, was a standing member on the international market.
Right.
And I forget what his title was, but he was higher up in the international echelon, yep, and knows all those international talents. You know, you got the Mesa brothers. I'm sure he knew about those, but he knows of some other guys that he's a super analytical guy.
Right.
You know, he is moving into that era of baseball. He's going to take Baltimore into that. And with the international signings, I think that him being a standing guy, I think that's somebody that actually, you know, can provide us that information, can get us there. The other thing for me with regards to Chris Davis was interesting with his comments regarding that. He was asked about Chris Davis. Where does he see him? He says, I actually want to be hands-on,
right,
with Chris Davis directly and his off-season regiment in preparation for the coming year and provide him with some analytics and some information that maybe he didn't have before.
Right.
To me, I heard, I probably read way too far into this, I heard, I'm going to give Brady a year with my information. Or not Brady, Davis, Chris, a year with my information. Because if he gives Brady his information, or I keep saying Brady.
Chris.
If he keeps giving Chris, we're talking about Chris, right?
Right.
if he gives Chris his information and Chris doesn't do anything with it, then it's on Chris.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And look, at the end of the day, it's a crap contract that you're going to have to pay one way or the other. And as a new GM coming in, if you know you're probably not going to be playing winning baseball for another 2, maybe even 3 years, there's going to be some transition in getting there. Why not, if you're going to be spending 20-something million dollars on this guy, why not see if some of your expertise can fix the problem?
Yeah.
This guy didn't get paid the money that he got paid for a 110 average. He got paid because at some point in his career, he was hitting 220 to 250, but more importantly, hitting 50 home runs a year.
Exactly.
I'll take that 220 to 250 if he can get him back to hitting 40 to 50 home runs a year.
Absolutely.
I'm okay with that, Chris Davis.
Especially on a team
that... I wanted that, Chris Davis.
Especially on a team that's projected, you know, as we move forward, to be a little bit... And it's historically, look at the Cardinals, and then look at the Astros. Is he going to take this into a team that is not necessarily... They have home run power,
right?
But they're not a home run team.
Right.
We've been a home run team. We found that gets us to a point, but we can't rely on it.
Right.
And that's what I expect him to do. I expect him to get out and, you know, as we grow, expect him to get some power, but not keep it.
Absolutely.
And now it's time for the 2 minute warning.
That's right, Scott.
Whew.
Welcome back, my friend.
Right into it.
Come back from Florida.
Put my feet right to the fire right away.
Hop right into the 2 minute warning here.
I don't have a lot, but I have a lot of information about the ones I have.
All right, see how this goes. We'll see how this works. Your 2 minute warning, it starts now.
Well, we talked about it. Redskins' Alex Smith broke his leg on Sunday. Joe Theismann was there and said it's similar to how his broken. Did you see the video, by the way?
Yes.
Did you see it side by side?
Yes.
Oh, so similar. It happened on the same day, the same yard line, and oh yeah, the same score.
Yep.
Talk about
very eerie.
Talk about games that give you the chills.
Yeah.
As we said, Colt McCoy going to start the Redskins, and we didn't mention Mr. Butt Fumble himself. Mark Sanchez gets signed as McCoy's backup. 76ers Markelle Fultz is out until he sees a shoulder specialist next week. He was the number one overall pick in the 2017 NBA draft. Fultz is listening to his agent on this, saying that he needs to see this specialist before he goes to practice again. And this could be a semi-loss for the Sixers. Fultz is shooting 42% from the field, averaging 8.2 points per game, 3.1 assists, 3.7 rebounds, and 22.5 minutes per game. Tiger and Phil, yeah, they've got their matchup coming up this Friday, that $9 million winner-take-all matchup.
They're still playing golf?
They're still playing golf in Vegas. That's where it's going to take place. They put a side bet. Tiger's response to Phil's statement that he was going to get a birdie on the first hole, Tiger says, at $100,000, Tiger says, I'll double it if you get it. Highly anticipated match is going to be a pay-per-view event, $19.99 on Bleacher Report is carrying it. Wow. In the highest-scoring NFL, Monday night NFL game, we've talked about it, the Rams beat the Chiefs. High-powered offenses go at it 54-51, and in the 40 seconds left in the game, Patrick Mahomes throws the interception, sealing it for the Rams.
Unreal.
Last but not least, we talk about Ohio State. Urban Meyer into a matchup with Jim Harbaugh, and Michigan could be one of the biggest games of both of their careers. Both teams enter 10-1, and while both teams have a strong offensive play, number 10 Ohio is coming off the defense by Maryland, or I'm sorry, the defensive handles by Maryland, giving up 51 points. Could be a great game.
Yeah.
It's going to be a game to watch in college football.
Absolutely. It's always a good game. No matter where they're at in the standings, the rivalry between Ohio State and Michigan is something that you've got to go to at once in your life to just experience it. Like, the atmosphere there, first of all, I've only gone to Ohio State to watch the game. But, right. I mean, that stadium holds 90,000 people. To put that in perspective, a jam-packed M&T Bank Stadium holds like 70. This is 20,000 more than what goes in every week at M&T Bank Stadium. And it's nothing but, like, crazy-ass college kids.
Right.
And it's, like,
a little drinking.
Yeah. And it's the Ravens Steelers times 10 as far as the intensity between the crowd and the fans and that kind of thing. It's something that you got to experience once in your lifetime. Always a good matchup between those two teams.
Yeah, it'll be a great matchup for sure.
Absolutely, man. That's it, man. That's a wrap.
72.
What was a long show.
Man, 72. It was a lot of information this week.
Yeah.
Number 72 is in the books. And we want to remind everybody out there, make sure you check us out. www.birdlandbs.com. We've got all of our episodes there. You can learn about Fred, myself, Ryan. You can contact us. Birdland BS gear. Go check out that page. You see my hat. I got the shirt on. Go check it out. There's tons of stuff there. You can also check us out, birdlandsports.com. There's us and some other podcasters and writers on there. There's enough content for every day of the week for you. It's for fans, by fans. Make sure to follow us, too, on all of our social media accounts. For Fred, check him out on Twitter, at FredBLBS. On Twitter for me, at ScottBLBS. Our regular Twitter handle, at BirdlandBS. BirdlandBS, I'm sorry. Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Just search BirdlandBS. You'll be able to find us, no problem. While you're there, like, follow, subscribe, share, be a part of Birdland BS Nation. When it comes to YouTube, check out our Monday Night Football games. We're going to be doing those commentaries every week and maybe throw in some of the playoffs games. We'll see how that works. Don't forget, use the hashtag BLBS Nation on Twitter. If you want to hear your opinion said, we'll bring it up on the show. That's how you let us know that you want to hear about it. Be sure to check out the audio podcast, Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, Apple, whatever. App of your choice, we're there. And thanks for tuning in, as always, for Birdland BS. We'll be back next week, 7:45 Tuesday night. I'm Scott.
I'm Fred.
See ya.
See ya.